الله الرحمن الرحيم. Abu Jahl had insulted Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Al Hamza radiallahu anhu had just returned from a hunting trip, and she reported it. Slave of Hazrat Hamza reported this incident to Hazrat Hamza, that you could have seen how Abu Jahl had insulted your nephew. Obviously, Hazrat Hamza radiallahu anhu was infuriated. He took out his bow and he struck Abu Jahl, saying that, "You insult my nephew, whereas I also follow the same religion. All this is emotions." But Hamza radiallahu anhu came back to his senses and he realized the announcement that he made. Whereas he had no intention of Islam previously, now he just made those announcements. Anyway, he went to the Haram Sharif thereafter, perturbed, uneasy that I made this announcement. I'm not clear about myself as yet. When we talk of deen, then deen speaks for honesty and truth. Deen comes from the word Diyanat as well, and Diyanat is honesty, truthfulness, purity. So this is what really deen stands for: purity, clean, honesty, etc. And then when we say purity and cleanliness, then in every respect, that purity and cleanliness in not just certain areas. When we talk of purity and cleanliness, generally we talk of body cleanliness and perhaps our physical cleanliness, right? This is what we talk about. But when Islam speaks about cleanliness, then it is not just selective, it is not just partial cleanliness, it is complete cleanliness. The difference between us or our definition of cleanliness and the cleanliness of the materialistic person is that he thinks about cleanliness, but cleanliness in appearance, perhaps one more than that cleanliness in his physical self. Beyond that, he's not really concerned about cleanliness. But the real cleanliness that he's concerned about is the appearance and the physical cleanliness. And when we talk about cleanliness, that is across the board, right through. So cleanliness in your iman, cleanliness in your action, deed, cleanliness in your niyat, cleanliness and purity in your mu'ashara and social etiquettes, cleanliness in your akhlaq and character, cleanliness in your dealing and interaction. So in every respect, absolutely clean. And you're looking for those areas that have been already affected and soiled, and you clean them. Your whole life is gone in cleaning them. Otherwise, what is the reason for, what is the institute of istighfar for? Why do you make istighfar? Istighfar is to clean, to cleanse yourself. You've realized or you have not realized that there is some dirt that has piled up. And this pile up has to go. Otherwise, there can be a constipation. I mean, there's going to be a constipation, then for you to progress, it's going to become difficult. You want to do things, but you can't do it. Why? There's a pile-up of dirt. There's a pile-up of filth that is already piled up. It's piled up, stacked up. Now, you need to get it out of the system for you to be able to progress, for you to be able to carry on and continue. So this is where our problem lies, that we are selective in our definition and our understanding of cleanliness and purity. Rasulullah SAW used to very often make this dua, Aati nafsi taqwaha wa zakkiha. Give me my soul, give me its righteousness and purify it, wa zakkiha, purify it, cleanse it. And this cleansing aspect is such a subtle thing, such a discreet thing, that after you are cleaning and you rectifying, improving, then to la tuzakku anfusakum, don't consider yourself to be pure and righteous. Because huwa a'lamu biman ittaqa, Allah Ta'ala knows really who is the truthful person, who is the honest person. You may be looking at your cleanliness and your righteousness from one perspective, but you don't know the snakes and the pythons that's within your system. In one aspect you have seen yourself, but you haven't seen yourself collectively, you haven't comprehensively gone and seen yourself in a scanning machine. So whatever you have seen, you have seen yourself clean in that respect. But what about the rest? Huwa a'lamu biman ittaqa. So that is why when we speak about hamd and praise, then we attribute it entirely to Allah Ta'ala. It's His prerogative. You know, when you said Alhamdu Lillah, that lam is for ikhtisas, is to show exclusivity. That praise is exclusive. It's His exclusive right. It's a right where He shares with none. If you see a good in another person, any type of good, right? The good is in a few things that we see. One is beauty. You like the person for the beauty, right? And what is beauty? If you break down beauty, you'll find about five elements to find beauty. One is color, right? One is shape. These are the most important things in beauty: color, shape. Now the other things are all additional things, like voice, right? It may not be beauty, but it enhances the beauty. But the most important thing is the color and the shape. Right? Now you remove this color and the shape from the equation, is there any beauty? Will you get attracted to the person? So you attracted what? To what? You attracted only to the shape and to the color of the person. Anything else? Think to yourself that you attracted to the person for anything else. Other things are all by the way, right? Everything else is by the way. But you ask a youngster that when he's proposing for what? For a language. Is he proposing for anything else? The main things that he's looking is color and shape. But look at the beauty of Allah Ta'ala, that He got your mind consumed just because of beauty, just because of color and shape. Just only in color and shape, and he got you covered complete. And you get mad over it. And you can't just get over it. Ask you, can you get over it? You can't get over it. Color and shape, color and shape. Allah Pak only used two slaves from all His kingdom, from all His reserves. He's used two slaves. What? Color and other shape. And He got everybody flat down. Can't move. When you see that youngster and he's consumed by something, infatuated, say, Mola, you know what's happening in my heart. But then you ask him, what's impressed you so much? The color and the shape. Anything else? Nothing else. Someone may tell you it's a voice or something, right? It's also one important thing. But the voice is not so much. Someone showed me an article, you know. So you get this famous personalities, you know, like a film star or a athletic or some sports, very, very popular sports person. So he was flying over to London, from whichever country, perhaps from France to London, to play some soccer match or whatever. And one woman phoned him, mad over you, and voice is too alert, you know, too beautiful. I need to see you and whatever. Now he has to meet a tight schedule, but this voice was so captivating that the next flight he took in to see this girl. Because the voice, whatever, the way she carried herself, and the voice was so captivating that he got caught and he went. Only to find out there was a fat, dark-looking mama there. hey, you wanted to sue her, but has he got sufficient grounds to sue her? No, not sufficient grounds. So you, the only thing that, catches your eyes and your attention is the color and the shade. But look at the beauty of Allah Ta'ala, that just in that two things, how He's enslaving you. And the whole world is also after color and shade. Right? You're buying so much, you see that tile there, right? What are you paying 200 rands for the one tile? I ask you, what is it? Anything else, color and shape. Do you see the kamal, the beauty of Allah Ta'ala? So all that beauty that you see around, that beauty, whatever it is, I showed you two things of the beauty of Allah Ta'ala that is placed, that captures everybody's mind and heart. One is color and shape, one is voice, one is taste, right? One is intelligence and understanding, reasoning, right? One is love and affection, generosity. So these are about the 6-7 things that you see in a person and you get infatuated, right? But really all this beauty, all this that comes to make the perfection and attraction, really where is it coming from? It's coming from Allah Ta'ala. It's a reflection of His beauty that's showing in that person. The beauty is coming from where? It's coming from Allah Ta'ala. It's just reflecting on you. Nothing more. You are here and then you're gone. So whose beauty were you reflecting? It was the beauty of Allah Ta'ala that you were reflecting. So when it's His beauty that you are reflecting, then He can shift it at any time, any moment, any second, He can shift it. If it's generosity, He can shift it from you. In a second, He can shift it from you. If it's understanding and reasoning, He can shift it from you. Don't you see, you have scientists, big persons, intelligent as ever. And overnight you hear they fell into a depression and they need psychiatric treatment. Don't hear about that. So if it was their own achievement, then how did they fall into this type of a rut? How did they fall into this type of a condition? He was so intelligent, so capable, people were attracted to him. And then overnight man fell into a depression and he's gone. Now he needs psychiatric treatment. You can't see him. So that which is in you is not your own. It is just the on loan. Right? And that is why Allah Pak says, لا تزكوا أنفسكم. Don't think too much of yourself. Don't you think yourself to be righteous. Don't you think yourself to be pure. Huwa alam. Allah Pak knows it. Our problem is that sometimes we pretend to take on Allah Pak's role. It's Allah Pak's duty, is His role, just leave it to Him. You do what you were assigned to do. What you were commanded to do, you just carry on doing that. But you don't pretend to be Allah Ta'ala. Don't pretend to be God. Yes, what He's told you, what He's instructed you, you just close your eyes and carry on. At the end, you will find the beauty, you will find the reward, you will find the results. And from the very beginning, you were trying to see the results, then you are wrong. He didn't ask you to see it. And you want to see it from the very beginning, then you want to see and peep into the unseen. You want to peep into his secrets, right? And he's not going to disclose his secrets to you. See? Allah Pak asked you to look at his beauty, right? But he asked you and he commanded you to look at his beauty in some respects, in not all respects. In some respects he told you that you look at his beauty, right? And some respects he told you don't look at it, right? Right? Like your father asks you, look at me, right? He's speaking to you and he says, look at me. So you look at him. So you must look at me all the time, you must look at me. In other words, he's telling you that you must follow me and you see my ways and you must follow the ways. But when he says look at me, he means look at him in certain ways, in certain things, in certain respects you look at him. Not in every respect. Right? Some things are his private. When he is private, then don't peep into his private. If he is busy with his family, with his wife, and you are peeping, you say, Father, you know, you told me to look at me. Or he's here, he's in the toilet, you know, that's out. So Allah Ta'ala has commanded you that you look at his beauty, but from certain respects. Right? From the respect that he's asked you to look at him, you would admire his beauty. In some things, he told you, don't look at it. That is my beauty. He's reflecting, or she's reflecting my beauty. That beauty that you see in that girl is a reflection of my beauty. When it's a reflection of my beauty, then you look at it. But this beauty you don't look at. This is taboo, this is haram. Like I said, your father is in his private life, he's changing. Right? You say, father, anybody you told must look at you. So no, you look at me, but in certain respects you look at me, certain respects I will tell you, don't look at me. So Allah Ta'ala is commanding you, in certain matters you will look at me, in certain matters you will just not look at me at all. Like it's a girl, you don't look. And anything that is lust, haram lust, you will not look. So you look in certain areas, and you're looking at the beauty of Allah Ta'ala. In certain areas, it is also the beauty of Allah Ta'ala, but don't look at that. Now why he's told that, that is his. That is his prerogative, is not your guess. He's asked you to enjoy. In certain respects you will enjoy, but in certain things you will not enjoy. Right? Eat of your own wealth, right? You're enjoying. But his wealth, you don't enjoy his wealth. So, overall everything belongs to Allah Ta'ala. Whether it's his wealth, my wealth, whoever's wealth, whose wealth is it? It is Allah Ta'ala's wealth. But Allah is asking you, in some respects you will look at it, you will enjoy it, you will relish, and in certain respects you will not look at it, you won't even touch it. So I was talking of deen, and what deen stands for. Deen stands for this level of purity. But this purity is in every department, every level. If we just understand this, I feel, you know, what 70-80% of our deen will be covered. If we just understand the aspect of purity, every respect is purify and cleanse. Aati nafsi taqwaha wazakkiha. Wazakkiha, purify, clean, honest, absolutely true. Really Allah Pak likes it, he appreciates it. And when you don't praise yourself, that's also being truthful. Because if you're praising yourself, then you are saying as though, Allah Ta'ala, you know what, it's my achievement. You must recognize my achievement. Whereas it was His grace that is reflecting in you. Now you are a liar, you are an imposter. You are pretending. I have given you a posh car, right? And I have given you a posh car to use. Say you use it for 1 year or use it for 5 years. It's my gift to you that you can use this posh car for 5 years. Now you go around trying to play around with the papers, title or the whatever car papers, and try to put it into your name. I discover what happens. Whatever I've given you, I take it away. Said, I gave you the honor and the comfort of using it. Now you're taking advantage over this. Are you being truthful? So that what I've given you was my favor. When I've given you what was my favor, then take it as a favor, not your own personal right. It was my favor that is reflecting on you. So you count it as my favor, and I'll be pleased with you. But then when you consider it to be your personal thing, obviously you are inviting my wrath upon you. So this is what deen stands for, is that honesty, clean, cleanliness, purity. At any given moment, any given time, I'm speaking about Hamza radiallahu anhu. And Hamza radiallahu anhu comes in the haram. He understands that I have made this declaration, but really I'm not easy about this because I didn't preempt this. I didn't think about this. I didn't organize my mind before this. I didn't plan for this. But in the spur of the moment, I made that declaration. And for me to retract now is going to be very difficult. So he's gone to the Haram Sharif. See the clarity of the mind. Mind is not clear. So when the mind is not clear, then you don't try to rectify a thing that's beyond your control. What's within your control, you rectify, it's alright. Small piece of dirt, you can pick it up, it's within your control. But there's a dirt that is stuck into your artery. Now there's a dirt that's stuck into your iman. Can you clean it? You're not in a position of cleaning it many a times. You don't know the procedure. You don't know where the wrong is. So you go and cleanse it. Whatever procedures you require to take and to make, you take up those procedures and cleanse that faith. That rot, that dirt, that filth, whatever is there in that iman, go and flush it out, get it out. And then enjoy that iman again. You say, no, I must try it myself. That you must, then you'll humiliate yourself, you'll disgrace yourself, you'll fall from one level to the other. Like that person who's got that artery blocked, and he wants to go and fix it up himself, what's going to happen? He's going to fall, deteriorate all the time. Today he's walking 50 steps, there'll be 30 steps, and he's already struggling for breath. Why? He was supposed to take that ordinary logical step, but he didn't take the steps. The simple step was, I don't know about this, I need to go and correct myself, I need to rectify this iman. How must I go and rectify the iman? The principal of Darulum Dioban, he was Mawlana Habibur Rahman Sahib Rahmatullahi. And after Isha, he comes across the ayat of the Quran Sharif, وَأَنْ لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. The insan will only get that which he strived for. What he strived for, he'll get. That's the only thing that he will get. What he worked for. Right? Now this verse came to his mind, that man will only get that what he works for. Then what's the purpose of making dua for the next person? Because you're only going to get what you worked for. And when I'm making dua for you, perhaps, right? Then I'm asking for your goodness. So that means my dua on behalf of yourself, will it not be accepted? Will it be rejected? Or I recite in some Quran Sharif and I passed on the sawab to you, then are you going to get credited or not? Now, it's Isha time and this ayat of the Quran Sharif is disturbing his mind. Now again, we talk of purity, we talk of cleanliness, we talk of honesty. I don't want any type of a blockage in my iman, in my knowledge, in my understanding. Let me come out true. I don't know it, I don't know it. I mustn't pretend to be knowing what I don't know. Now I don't want to die with ignorance. My mind is stuck up on this verse here, أَلَّيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ مَا سَعَى. I don't find a solution to it, I don't find an understanding to it. Now, what must I do? He is at the head of the madrasa, Darulum Dioban. And at that point of the time, 11, 12 o'clock at night, now this verse is sticking in his mind. What do I do? So he says, the next best person I can go to is Mawlana Gangwai Rahmatullahi. Mawlana Gangwai Rahmatullahi is about 35 kilometers away. And there is no transport available that zamana. From Dioban to Gangwai, there is no transport. Right? You're talking about about 150 years ago, no transport. Now what to do? Now when that concern of purity and honesty comes into the mind, then you don't look at time, you don't look at place. I need to do it, I must go and do it. He goes out on foot. Dark of the night, in the depth of the night, in the darkness of the night, he goes to see Mawlana Gangwai Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi around the time of Tahajjud, perhaps 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's making his wuzu. And in that state, Hazrat, I got this problem. So while he's making the wuzu, Hazrat Gangwai Sahib Rahmatullah is giving him the answer very, very casually. He says, Sa'i se murad, sa'i imani hai. You see, that nobody, every person will enjoy the results of his own work, right? Every person will enjoy the fruits of his own efforts. Then the effort referred to here is the effort of iman. In other words, your iman cannot benefit the iman of, cannot benefit him. Cannot benefit him. Your iman is beneficial to you. And you can't take your iman and give it to a kafir. You can't take your iman and give it to a mushrik. You can't take your iman and give it to a Yahudi. Can't. It will only work for you. It will not work for a person who doesn't have iman. It will work only for that person who's got that iman. And that person who doesn't have that iman, your iman can't work for him. Now he's breathing, alhamdulillah. The whole mind is clear. Just now my mind was stuck. But you see that cleanliness, that purity. And for that purity, there is procedure. In everything, in worldly matters also, we know. Or I'm stuck about something, that there is a procedure. I'm going to find out from the person who's capable. Not speculate and not take a chance in my dunyawi matters. So why can't we apply the same maxim and the same principle in our deen? That in my dunya, I didn't take a chance, right? I knew now, hey, my books, something wrong in my books. If I take a chance on these books here, then I have to pay 1 million rands, right? So let me go to an expert. I'll have to pay about 15,000-20,000 rands, but really it will be a saver. He will show me how to save, not 1 million, perhaps 5 million that he'll show me how to save. I'm counting on one. So what's the dividing line? The dividing line is we attach importance to some things and some things we don't attach importance. Money we attach importance, you know, 5 million, 1 million. That is why you'll find people will come and tell you, you know, I got 5 million interest, what must I do with it? But he's got 10 rand interest, he's disinterested. If it's 10 million interest, no, Mona is 5 million, 10 million interest, Mona, what can I do with it? Tell me some, give me some idea. So you're not asking, you're not seeing the thing right. That man that had 10 rand, alright, he has sewage, but only 10 kilos. And 10 million, he's got 10 million kilos of sewage, he's got pure sewage, worse than sewage he's got. But that thing is not sticking in your mind. The impurity, you can't perceive that impurity. You can't feel that impurity, therefore you're asking. Had you only been able to perceive that impurity, then you wouldn't want to be there one night. This thing here, and I must be sleeping with this thing here. I can't do it. Imagine, you don't get the smell. Just imagine that your under your bed is lined up with sewage, right? Stacked up, pure. You can't get the smell. Completely conceived. Can you sleep one night, I ask you. So the impurity of interest and haram is far worse than that. So if you only knew the impurity, how dirty it is, how filthy it is, you know, if you only could perceive that, then you could have come to right conclusion. But we cannot perceive it. There are some things that we'll have to just accept or with the word of Rasulullah. Rasulullah said this, but it is like that. My mind can't understand, I can't see it. But he said it, when he said it, it must be. You see the purity, what counts is purity. So as Hamza radiallahu anhu can see that I don't find that level of purity. I don't find that level of cleanliness. My iman is the most sensitive thing. On iman revolves my entire faith, my entire iman revolves around it. So if this is not right, then what's the use of carrying on? Everything revolves around iman. And iman is just not knowing something, rather being convinced and absolutely certain about it. I am convinced about it, I have committed myself. That's iman. Not just knowing. Ya'rifuna, even Yahud also had that. They also understood, they also knew. But Allah Pak at no place in the Quran Sharif called them believers. Though Allah Pak says that they knew about it. Ya'rifuna kama ya'rifuna abnaum. They knew about Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. They knew he is the Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. They knew he is the Nabi that is predicted in their books. They knew that. Right? But just that knowledge wasn't sufficient to make them mu'mins. So mu'min is something else. Then what is mu'min then? What is iman? Iman is the level of conviction and you're giving yourself, assigning yourself entirely to him now. That I believe in him. So when I believe in him, believe means that I am convinced and I've assigned myself, I've committed myself to his ways or to his teachings. Whatever is brought from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, I've assigned myself to it. I've given myself to it. Now that's called iman. Now he's finding that uncertainty in his heart. He said, no, I must go and get my mind cleared. Because I want this thing to be prosperous. I want this iman to flourish. When I want this iman to flourish, then I need to have the right type of foundation. And if I don't have the right type of foundation, and I'm putting up a slab over it, obviously it will be like that Tongat Mall. Right? So I need to ensure that the foundation is right. The columns are right, I need to understand, I need to see that. In dunya matters, our brains work. I need to get the columns right, the foundations right. Yeah, I need to get the foundations right, I need to get the columns right. Then where's the problem? The problem is somewhere wrong in the foundation. Iman is right, not right. There's some weakness in the iman. Why is there an inconsistent plan in the iman and your action? Why is there an inconsistent plan between the iman and perhaps your social etiquettes, or iman and your dealings. Why is there an inconsistent system? The inconsistency is because the iman is not right. So get the iman right. Once you got the iman right, everything will fall in place. Slab will fall in place, everything else will fall in place. But get the iman right first. And if you fix up everything else without fixing the iman, everything will collapse. You get it up and it will collapse again. You get it up moving and it will collapse again. Because the iman is not right. So you see this great alim, right? And he's got that unclarity in his mind. Mind is not clear. He said, no, I don't want to delay this. I've got a problem, let me go and fix it up straight. I don't want to delay. I got it, I must go and clear it up. I don't want there to be a constipation or a pile up. And it must be such a pile up that I can't remove it. So Hamza radiallahu anhu, he comes to the Haram Sharif and he pleads to Allah Ta'ala. One day, 2 days, perhaps over a month or so, he carries on and on and on. Now that was the only recourse. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is his nephew and he's claiming Nubuwwat. And Islam is still new. The first, second, third year of Islam. Now what must he do? The only recourse is now to Allah Ta'ala. Where there's a recourse that you will go to someone and ask him for assistance and advice, you do that. Now Islam is still growing up. People are just growing up in Islam. How can I go to them? Because they're still growing up. And obviously there can't be a person as educated, as learned, and as intelligent, and as righteous as the Nabi. So I can't go to him because I have that little bit of uneasiness. I'm not yet convinced. So he goes to Allah Ta'ala. That was the only recourse he went. See, Allah Pak looks at your situation and your circumstance. What's the circumstance like? What is the situation like? And then he opens up a way for you. That was your circumstance. You did what you could do. Have you exhausted your efforts? When you've exhausted your efforts, now he will open up the way for you. But he sees that, are you exhausting the efforts or not? You've exhausted your efforts, so he'll open the way. That was within your limits. That was within your jurisdiction. You have done all that. Now it's left to Allah Ta'ala. Allah will open the way for you. In any situation, when you have exhausted all your efforts, you have followed procedure, you exhausted efforts, your efforts, Allah will definitely open the way. Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi, he comes across a masla. He can't find a solution to a masla. So he looked at the kitabs, everything else, whatever he needed to look, he looked it up, looked at the chain of narrators, compared the hadith against the other hadith, everything else, whatever procedures he needed to follow, he followed up. Now, he can't find a solution. So he turns to Allah Ta'ala, that I've done everything what I needed to do, now I can't find a solution. So he turns to Allah Ta'ala, goes into sajda, before the completion of the second rakat, he's got the answer. Have you exhausted your efforts? By the same token, in the old days, there wasn't a system of banks. So when there wasn't a system of banks, then people used to save the money underground, right? And they're going forward to something, some very remote corner, and they will go and secure the money there. Because there's no banks now, where you secure your money? I know when I was a youngster, so now the takings, that time, 500 was a lot of money, right? The takings for the day. And the manager of the shop now, that we used to be working under, he would take the money and deposit it into the deep freeze. That was the last place that the thief would look for, right? So in the old zamana, they should dig up a hole, and they should put it inside, right? Now, it's a long journey, 1-2 years, and he's coming back. And he's totally forgotten where when I deposited the money. All gold coins, all piled up. Millions and millions I piled up, and I totally forgot. What must I do? So he went up to Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi, that's what happened. So Imam said, Imam Sahib told him, what do you do? If money matters, we get very interested. Huh? So he make wuzu, properly wuzu. And then with sincerity, as sincere as you can, right, make niyat that the whole night you stand up for namaz. Now millions are going, you think he's going to leave that off. I'll relate the story just now, so I'll complete it. Shab-e Qadr, that was the answer, isn't it? So, two youngsters in Kanpur, they took a big rock, 100-kilo rock, and they put a cover over it, put a big plastic over it, and they're making dua next to it. Allah Ta'ala, convert this into gold. 100 kilo rock, and they got it. Shabakadar, all duas are getting answered, right? So they, all night, zikr, tasbihat, Quran Sharif, kitab reading, namaz, the works, doing anything. But the whole night must go in ibadat. Because the duas are going to get answered in Shabakadar, right? Anyway, after the Fajr Azan went, they opened the thing to find a pure rock there. Now they went to help us, you know, Murad told us that all duas getting answered and all that. And now we opened the whole thing up, there's nothing but stone. So there was one understanding businessman in that whole place. Some businessmen are quite intelligent. You know, they know the pulse. Businessman understands the pulse of another businessman. So he understands the pulse. He says, hey, just thank Allah Ta'ala that that thing didn't become gold. So why? You curse me. You don't think good for me. He says, you know why? Because if that whole thing turned gold, then there would have been a big fight between your two. I made the more important dua, you were just there. So I'll give you 5 kilos, 95 is mine. And then you have to go into court, and both of you all wouldn't have gotten anything. And what you would have got is enmity and hatred. So what you have got now, your friendship is retained, is maintained, and you haven't got that gold. So thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that you don't have that gold. So sometimes you don't get this, what you're asking for, and what you don't get is to your own advantage. It's not to your disadvantage, but it is to your advantage. But just that we can't understand, we can't see the unseen. Because we can't see the unseen, therefore we think, why did Allah not answer our dua? I mentioned this once before as well. Around 1980s, you know, we had one Musalli here, Haji Ovi, Rahmatullah Ali. In the Spingo Beach Masjid, in the old days, there were three musallis that were like the pillars of the masjid. The Haji Duma from next door, you know, that Haji Suleiman. And then this Haji Desai that he's still alive. And Haji Ovi, that Abdul Qadir Hussain, his father-in-law, Channel Islam. So they were like the pillars of the masjid, like they support. You know, we see them now, you know, everything is carrying on. But at any given time they are in the masjid. In Quran Sharif, Zikr, Tasbihat and all that. Right? So this Haji Ovi was in Hajj with us around 1980-81, I can't remember the exact year. Now whilst we were returning, I had to go to the airport to help someone. At that time the movement was quite easy, you go, you help someone, you come back. So we had to just go to the airport to help someone and come back. Now we see this old chacha, Haji Ovi, and he's running helter-skelter. You can see he's real ghabrati. So obviously, it was natural, I come from the same town, I had to go up to him. Haji Sahab, what happened? I see you in a ghabrat state. He said, no, I don't know, what's wrong with these people? I've got a ticket, you know, in that zamana. When you had a confirmed ticket, you had to go and reconfirm it. So I did the reconfirmation, my name is appearing here. But they don't want to take me on the flight. What's wrong with these people? How unfair are they? Now we tried to help, you know, spoke to those officers and all, they won't do anything. No, you're not going to the flight, you're not going. I'll be trying here, there, running around, one person to the other, one is leading you to the other, the second to the third. Meanwhile, about an hour passed, an hour or 1.5 hour passed. We're still at the airport, they're announcing that this flight that had left was over Riyadh, there was a technical problem, it crashed, everybody died. Now the charger is rejoicing, going right to the officer, please, you know, I can pay you double the amount for not taking me on the flight. You know? I paid to go to the flight, but I'll pay you double now, not to be on the flight, you see. So sometimes you don't know what's going present, right? You feel very bitter about it. But for the mystery to unravel, it would take some time. And then you will realize that this was the beauty of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But you need to have the sabr and the patience. Inshallah, you will see it. After some time, maybe sometime 1 year, sometime 2 years, sometime 10 years, but you will see the beauty that it didn't work for you, it didn't work out for you for the better. Now you've got that money, and you say, no, you know, I didn't enjoy money, my children must enjoy money. Right? It's how a normal person speaks, that I didn't enjoy money, I must earn the thing, and I must see that my children enjoy the money. And then, the next thing that you know, the child is in drugs, is something other wrong. Now you said you wanted that money, now you got that money, now what happened after that? You felt that wealth was a solution. You felt that wealth will be a comfort. But you could not see into the unseen. And you were not pleased with the decree of Allah Ta'ala. You would have seen life from this perspective, that I'm pleased with the decree of Allah Ta'ala. Let me be comfortable with my lot, whatever is decreed for me. Oh, yeah, I want it. And you kept on asking. And then Allah gave it to you, and then you see what happened to it. What happened to you? What happened to your children? Now, you are cursing yourself, why you've got that money. See that money, what he's done to my child. His whole marriage is on the rocks. Are they going to a... what a problem they are going through because of this. Now you can't reverse the thing. You felt that that was a solution. But was it a solution? Was it a remedy? Was it a cheer for you? So we talk about Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi, and this person comes up. So Imam Sahib tells him, you know, make proper wuzu, all the mustahab, and sincerity, absolute sincerity. Engage yourself in nafil namaz from the beginning of the night right till the end. Right till then. Anyway, now that millions are stashed up there now, he has to do something to recover the money. So he made wuzu properly. You can imagine how he was made wuzu. No talking, nothing. All the mustahab, not using too much of water. One mud or something, water, whatever, you know, amount he need to use, that amount. The lota he used, facing the qibla, reading all the masnoon du'as, then all the khushu as though last namaz is going to read. With all the istighfar and tawbah, everything, and going to namaz. Now the first rakat he started, and straight away his mind went on to the money. The money is there. Anyway, inna atayna kal-kawthar, kul huwallah, quickly finish the namaz. He asked Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi, the next morning, you know, this is what happened. So after you found the money, what did you do? So then I arrested them. So you didn't keep up to your promise, you see. Your promise with Allah Ta'ala was that you will stand the entire night. And Shaitan couldn't stomach you standing up the entire night. So he led you towards the money in that first rakat with such intention, such sincerity, you know. He was performing that namaz. He got very jealous and envious over you. So, you know, this person is going to win just now. Before he wins it, let me just give it to him, finish. Let me put him aside. So what we are speaking about, the grace of Allah Ta'ala, is this purity. And Deen stands for purity. Deen is Diyanat. And Diyanat is purity, honesty, truthfulness. You can only understand this in our iman, in every respect, in everything, small or big, but just get that cleanliness, purity, cleanliness. Really, if there is anything that's an obstruction, then this aspect is an obstruction. From within our hearts, from within our minds, from within our eyes, within our ears, we are looking up just to pile it up. But there is obstructions, there is impurity in the eyes, there is impurity in the ears, impurity in the heart. Then how are you gonna get progress? How is it gonna work out? One buzurg heard, you know, if I dedicate 40 days to Allah Subhanahu Wa Taala, then there will be a special favor, there will be special illumination that I will go through in my namaz, in my ibadah. I will go through it. So he dedicated 40 days. And after the 40 days, he's supposed to feel that pure feeling, that goodness within his heart and mind. Now the 40th day came and no feeling. Like, you know, after you made i'tikaf and you did it the right way, after the 10th day you feel a special light within your heart. Anybody did that i'tikaf rightly, then he wants to be in that i'tikaf all the time, every year of his life, right? Because he did that i'tikaf rightly. Right? Now that 40 days ended, but he doesn't feel that illumination, doesn't feel that pleasure, that blessing within his heart. So he's thinking for some time, then he went up to his mother and he said, you know, this is the feeling that I went through. And I want to know, where did I go wrong? You see, he is sure that Allah's promise is true, you will get it. Man akhlasa lillahi arba'een. But he's sure about the hadith. But there's some wrong within himself. You see, you're sure about the stove. And he's got a guarantee, it's coming from a reputable company, then you show about the stove. But then why is it not working? Right. Or, for example, turn it the other way around. You show about the electrical supply, but why is the stove not working? Right? The electrical supply, you are absolutely certain because all the lights, everything else is working. But why isn't the stove working? So what is the logical thing to do? To go and fix up the stove. Because the supply is coming, the current is coming. But why isn't the stove working? And the right thing, what is the right thing? To go and fix it up. The supply is coming, but why isn't the fridge working? So the right thing is going to go and fix it up. So the similarly, the supply of Allah Ta'ala, of divine help is coming. But why am I not getting affected? There is some blockage on the way, somewhere. So the blockage is mine. The stove is mine. So the blockage is mine. When the blockage is mine, then I need to clear myself up. I don't need to ask now why Allah Pak is not sending it. Allah Pak is sending it. Like the current is going through. But it's not coming on the stove. Why is it not coming on the stove? Because there is some blockage on the stove. So the right thing is then don't ask Allah Ta'ala why you stopped it. No, Allah Pak is giving it. It's there, but there is a blockage. You have created a blockage. And that blockage is not allowing the current to flow through. Therefore, you're not seeing that oven working. You're not seeing the stove working. You're not seeing the fridge working. So now he's looking from within himself and he's asking his mother, you know what? I did all this, but I don't see the thing working like how I expected. So the mother says, no, it's my fault. This is when I was pregnant with you, then I had overseen my neighbor's yard. There was some ripe fruit, you know. There was a nice ripe fruit. And I could just not resist. And I went and ate the ripe fruit. And because it was haram, it was taken without permission. And that went into my system, via my system, it went to your system. So obviously you had to have a blockage within you, an obstruction within you. Now the right way is to go back. Go back to the neighbor, ask him maaf, or go and remunerate him for the wrong that you have done, compensate him, inshallah, he'll come back. So well, they did the procedure and everything came right. 40 days, nothing worked out. They went and got this right, they went through the procedure. You see, you go through the same procedure, and you committed the wrong, go and rectify it, and everything is flowing again. The blockage was there, but they followed procedure. The followed procedure, everything came through again. See, this is where we're going wrong. Everywhere else we say, no, we follow procedure. The lights are, they cut off the lights, so we follow procedure, we'll go to the lights department, or electrical department, right? Water, and we'll ask the water works, right? So we know how to follow procedure there. They gave you a fine, you pay the fine, and open the line for you again, right? But here we take it casual, say, no, it'll work out, make some dua or something else, some shortcut, and it'll work out for us. Hazrat Imam Muhammad Thami Sahib Rahmatullah says, as he says, Hazrat Imam Masihullah Sahib Rahmatullah says, that in the month of Ramadan, many people come to the Khanqa. Even in Thanabu, in that zaman, they used to come, like ulama, a lot of ulama, because Ramadan is the main holiday, you see. So they come and spend 30 days, 40 days, 20 days, according to their convenience, they come and spend time. So one person, one alim comes to spend time. And Mulana is sitting right at the back. And this alim sees everybody seated, scattered, you know. So one person is seated there in one spot. So this alim stands up from his place and comes and sits next to this alim here. One that is reciting Quran Sharif, he comes next to him and recites to him. Recites near him. While he's watching what's going on, so this person that stood up from his place and came and sat next to this person here, he calls that alim and he asks him, "But you know, you were seated at that spot, you got up from your spot and you came and sat next to this person here. What was the reason for that?" So he says, "The reason for that was that you were seated at the back, and when you were seated behind, then it is bare adab for me to be allowing my back to face towards you. The adab is that without any valid reason, we don't allow our backs to face a Muslim. That is why you find in the Asr namaz, in the Fajr namaz, you know, where there is going to be a long period of sitting, the Imam sits around, he turns around, that he will not allow his back to face the rest of the Musallis. Obviously, Zohar, Maghrib, Isha, you're going to make a long dua, Allahumma anta salam, just 1 minute and you're going to be moving. So there it's tolerated. But in Fajr, And in Asar Namaz, you will say you will turn around. So you will not disrespect the mu'min. You see that purity and the cleanliness that you have to have even towards the mu'min. And the cleanliness towards the Muslim is so great that Nabi Sam is telling the Kaaba Sharif one day that you're so great, you know, so blessed, you're so great, such so great is your majesty and your honor and your respect. But wallah, the respect of the heart of a mu'min is greater than you. The heart of a mu'min is greater than you. Now, we look at ourselves in retrospect. The azmat and the respect that we show to the Kaaba Sharif, do we show it to our brethren? Ask ourselves. We don't need any second person to come and answer. Ask ourselves that the respect that we show to the Kaaba Sharif, do we show it to a mu'min? So that iman that is within that mu'min is so great. Therefore, Abu Zughanuddin say, it's their own experience, right? That Allah Ta'ala, the heavens and the earth cannot contain Allah Ta'ala. But if there's anything that can contain Allah Ta'ala, is the heart of a mu'min. The heart of a mu'min is so great, is so great. Greater than the Kaaba Sharif, that nothing, not even the heavens can contain Allah Ta'ala, not even the earth can contain Allah Ta'ala. If there's anything that can contain the grandeur and the honor of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala, then it is the heart of a mu'min. So how great is the heart of the mu'min? And then what respect do we need to show to that mu'min? Can we say now that our hearts are clean for every mu'min? Can we say our hearts are pure? Or we have some malice, some type of reservation, some type of ill feeling towards him? We've got that, we need to clean it up. And then we don't need to pry into his affairs, what he's doing, and what he must be doing, why he may be doing this. That's not our business. Allah Pak didn't assign us to do that, to go and find out what he's doing in his private life. Allah Pak didn't assign it to us. So then why should we pry into his life? Yes, if there's a wrong that is taking place before us, we'll rectify it according to our capacity and strength. What we can do, we will do. But beyond that, I don't need to go and pry into the person's life, into his private life, what he's doing, what he's not doing, and try and investigate somehow the other right way or straight way or crooked way, and find out what he's doing, what he's not doing. I don't need to know that. Is there a need for me to do that? Is the progress of my iman suspended to me knowing what wrong you are doing? So why must I get into it? So you see the respect that we are supposed to be showing to a mu'min, the cleanliness, the heart, to what level there must be a purity. So now when you're talking about purity, we are talking about purity so that that line with Allah Ta'ala is not interrupted. That's why we are talking about it. And we need to emphasize upon this, because nobody is talking about it. If there is a discussion, then there is discussion about amal and deed. But is there a specialized discussion just on purity only? Spirit clean your character, your dealings, your social standards and etiquettes, your ibadat and namaz, your imaniyat and aqaid. Are you cleaning it? Or anything and everything goes into your system. You heard about Shiaism and there you're giving it a place in your heart. You heard about Qadianism and you're giving it a place in your heart. You heard of any type of philosophy and concept and you're giving it a place in your heart. So I ask you, is that a heart or is that dumping ground? So your heart is too sensitive. It cannot take all these things. If there's any wrong there, any inconsistency, then that thing needs to be flushed out, it needs to be purged out. So Mawlana asked this person here, you sat down here, you say because of adab, right? Because you saw me sitting at the back and you didn't want my back, you didn't want me to be facing, you didn't want yourself to be facing your back towards me. Alright, I accept that. That you're supposed to be showing respect to a mu'min. But you see the masjid is so spacious, then why did you want to sit next to this person here? Why did you choose to sit next to this person? Now the Mawlana is silent. See, the road to rectification and purification is very delicate, is very, very sensitive. And most people don't understand. This is not a straightforward thing, you'll get it right. It's a very sensitive thing. And Mawlana is training an alim now. Why is he training him? Why is he training that alim? He's training that alim that tomorrow he'll have to train hundreds. So if he is going to train hundreds, then he needs to know how to diagnose the problem. But he doesn't know how to diagnose how he's going to treat. So he needs to know diagnosis so he can prescribe correctly. So he will train him at a different level, and an ordinary person he will train him at a different level, right? So there will be different classes of people that will be coming, but everybody definitely needs to know tazkiyah and purification. When Allah Ta'ala has suspended all your success on tazkiyah and purification, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّاهَا قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ تَزَكَّى. Purification, that all progress is suspended on this, as though it is the foundation to your progress. So now that Mona is silent, so you see Mona's system and why he employed that system. It was not just to disgrace someone, to humiliate someone, or to smash down someone. It was not for that. It was to educate the person, to bring him up. And to bring him up, you need to take him to that level so he understands the thing, and he understands it very well. So he kept quiet. So then Mona says, all right, I understand why he's keeping quiet. So he prompted the answer to him. So he says, you see, you left your place and you came and you changed your place. All right, the one reason I understood. But then the second thing that you did, you came and sat next to this person that was reciting Quran Sharif, whereas the masjid was so spacious. It's a different thing if it was all packed up and you found a place somewhere next to someone. Not a problem. But there's so much of space, then why do you choose to sit next to this person? So you couldn't answer that, but let me give you the answer. The answer is simple. That you sat down next to him, right? You sat down next to him. Do you understand? Do you realize that you brought some inconvenience to him? Because now he was reciting Quran Sharif and he was doing it, and there was a communication, open communication between him and Allah Ta'ala. Like you're sitting down and making dua, right? You know that nobody is watching you. You are alone with Allah Ta'ala. You want to cry, you can cry. You want to say something repeatedly, you want to do it, you can do it. You want to become a little bit emotional, you can express your emotions. But the moment you know that there's someone next to you, do you feel that ease? Do you feel that freedom? So haven't you robbed him of that freedom? He had that freedom with Allah Ta'ala. Have you robbed him of that or not? He said, yes, I am guilty of that. Didn't you make him feel constrained? You see this tazkiyah now. This purity and correction. Now, is it a simple thing? It's a complicated thing. So now Mullah is asking him. See, Mullah is correcting him, and he needs to correct him to bring him to a higher level. Like I said, he'll have to go and dispense hidayat everywhere else. Dispense the same thing. He'll have to open his own dispensary. He'll become Mullah's representative. So he needs to understand it at a higher level. So he said, Mullah asked him, alright, now you accepted that was wrong, so that was a mistake. So Piruski saza kya honi chahiye? Then what should be the penalty? So Mullah, whatever you suggest. So no, that can't work. You commit the wrong and I must suggest the penalty. You commit the wrong, you must suggest the penalty. See, Mullah has opened his mind. He's not to press the person, not to squeeze the person, but to open up his mind. So alright, what I'll do, I will go and straighten all the musalli's shoes. So, wah, wah, what a great thing, Mawlana. What do people say? Kitne bare Sufi sahab hai. What a great Sufi sahab he is, you know. See, he's got so much of humility, everybody's shoes, he's going rectifying, correcting it. Such a great buzurg came to the Khanqa. So, this will make your position even worse. See, he's opening his mind. Mawlana is opening his person's mind. Oh, alright, this will not work out. The second thing I think I can do is, you see this drain of yours, like India, you find the drains a little bit dirty, right? Everybody's spitting, the snot is there, the dirt is there, right? So I'll go with my own hands, I'll clean. He said, well, that's even worse. I say, what a big buzruk, with his own Mubarak hands, with his own Mubarak hand, Mawlana, and he's cleaning up all the drains, all the dirt and filth. So, what do you suggest? Oh, now he's opening his mind. So, alright, what I'll do? I'll go out of the khanqa then. You know, then I'll go out as though I'm suspended, you know. I'm suspended and my returning will be subject to your permission. I'll write a letter of apology, etc. You know, I'll be in suspense. So that suspense will bring a little bit of intelligence and understanding in my mind. You know, you're unhappy with the staff, then you suspend him. Don't you suspend him? And that is in the Qanṣu Sunnat. Ka'b ibn Malik radiyallahu was suspended for about 50 days. Can it happen? So this will bring a little bit of a constraint within me, and that constraint will open up the mind. So alright, then where will you go? See, Mawlana is teaching, correcting, right? So I'll go to a Lohari. He said, no, Lohari, you don't know anybody there. You don't have any folks. You'll feel very, very uncomfortable there. So alright, then I'll go to Jalalabad. Say, I'll go to Jalalabad. Yes, Hazrat Imam Masihullah Sahib is there. So perhaps there'll be some comfort for you. He's showing a way out and making it easy also for him. Not making him feel totally despondent. Yeah, there is a problem. We need to rectify the problem. We need to take things in procedures. But not squeezing the person to the limit where he says, hey, this is unmanageable. See. Now, this is how Islah takes place. Now, we want just Islah, you come and listen to one talk, and after that, talk about 10 business problems, you know, and then one, from the 10 business problems, my investments, you know, and then Islah must take place. Like a miracle thing must happen. Unfortunately, this is how our Islah works. Anyway, now, when I sent him up there, he wrote a letter that I committed this wrong. I'm very remorseful about it, and I understand that Mullah showed me the right type of procedure. I followed it. I'm very grateful. So immediately Mullah's response was, "Sab maaf hai, dil saaf hai, ab wapas chale aao. Everything is forgotten. My heart is clean. Come back." Allah Baktofi.